On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, Sam Amick from The Athletic joins us to talk about the absurdity of unwritten rules, Klay Thompson coming to grips with Father Time, and the Clippers going full rebrand. All that and much more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports, Ball Don't Lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie podcast. Get us wherever you get your podcast, especially your NBA podcast. If you see the face over there to the side, the man with the great hair on an early Monday morning, I sincerely appreciate the effort that you put here this morning. That is Sam Amick. He is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. He is also a vice president of the Pro Basketball Writers Association. And Sam, of course, also has his own podcast. Check him out on The Athletic's NBA show. So we got a lot to get to. But before we get to the Clippers rebrand, before we get to Steve Kerr's contract and your conversation with Klay Thompson, we got to start with all these unofficial rules and fights. And like, Sam, I don't know about you, but does it seem like the unofficial rules is something that has just sort of popped up in the last 10 years or so? Like, it feels really weird that dudes get upset that you don't take a shot clock violation anymore.
I'm with you, Vinny. Thank you for having me, brother. I always enjoy coming on the show. I told you over the All-Star break, you got a loyal listener here, so I love what you're doing.
I appreciate
in this space.
That.
I should be able to give credit where credit is due on this line, but the other day I heard somebody put it really well, where they basically said, you know, they're unwritten rules for a reason. They weren't worth writing down, you know. and some of these, it feels like a baseball thing, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like baseball's got tons of them. You know, the game in question here, and I'm blanking on who took that layup that led to all
it wasn't Pods.
What's that?
It wasn't Pods.
No, but whoever it was, the key nuance and detail was like the shot clock was expiring. You know what I mean? It
yes.
wasn't like they even yes. had the opportunity to dribble it out. Like, so, oh, you really think that I need to go ahead and take a shot clock violation out of respect for your, you know, sensibilities? Yeah. I mean, I'm with you on that. It's definitely not worthy of getting upset about, but it does seem like at least half the league believes in them.
Which is really, it's really weird to me that, okay, Draymond Green is going to chop down Grant Williams to basically big up Miles Bridges and say he can do no wrong, which I understand the whole Michigan State connection, the Clutch Sports thing and everything else, but you kind of got to read the room on that one.
You do.
The other one, the Mike Conley, Dennis Schroeder one. Dennis Schroeder just seems to get upset over the weirdest things in that way. Like Mike Conley, who's like the most harmless dude in the league. Mike Conley, I think, has got a total of one technical foul throughout the course of his career,
yep.
which I think he might have gotten maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and it was a big deal out
recent.
Of that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's unwritten rules. It's guys getting really chippy. And then there's really chippy, which is what happened with New Orleans and Miami on Friday night, where, you know, Zion Williamson got taken down on a hard foul that actually wasn't a hard foul. And then everything just went out from there. And Thomas Bryant and Jose Alvarado, like, I don't know about
Thomas
you.
Thomas throwing real punches, like real punches.
And throwing real punches at Jose Alvarado. Like, seriously, right. what are we right. doing here? Like, what are you going to accomplish? And that was my thing, Sam, with Draymond Green and Jordan Poole. What are you going to accomplish by hitting Jordan Poole in the face?
Sure.
What are you going to accomplish by hitting Jose Alvarado in the face? Nothing.
Listen, man, we both know from coming up that, you know, the whole bully thing, and Draymond's always been good to me in his career and I enjoy him. But when it comes mm-hmm. to those moments, you know, yeah, there's a bully component that, you know, sometimes they're pretty willing to go after smaller dudes and the optics are not great. You know, Thomas at least is more of a heat of the moment, actually in competition type thing. You know, the Draymond thing was a whole lot messier, but that we call that punching down. That's what's happening there.
Yes, literally punching down. And then, of yes. course, Jimmy Butler decides to go full heel in New Orleans where someone captured a great shot of him barking at the crowd in New Orleans while he's walking off the floor like a wrestling heel. Like, if we can really get back to the days of wrestling heels, being in the NBA where all these dudes are not so concerned about their brands and being liked and all of these things, sure, that would make for a much better NBA. One thing I love about Draymond, he embraces being a heel.
Vinny, real quick story for you. The night last week, 10 days ago, whenever it was, when the Warriors had their rematch against the Suns and Draymond played Jusuf Nurkić for the first time since their infamous incident that led to his 12-game suspension, Draymond had a ton to say post-game. It was an extremely interesting, environment where Draymond is leaning into, even though he's still on, kind of like thin ice with the NBA, you could tell that he was starting to get comfortable and basically acting like, I'm still Draymond, I'm still going to be me, and I can't go over the line. But so he was kind of pushing that envelope a little bit again. And after the whole night comes to an end, a few of us are standing in the Warriors locker room just seeing who else might be around. And I look over at Draymond's locker, and each of the Warriors have a TV in their locker. And I look up on Draymond's television set, and lo and behold, there's WWE on the television. It was pretty fitting. So, I mean, yeah, that is one of the few dudes who, love him or hate him, is entertainment value wise, is not afraid to go down that road.
I have no problem with Draymond being like the heel that embraces being the heel. I got no problem with Draymond Green saying the things that he says in his press conferences, because A, it gives us something to write about and we can sort of further contextualize all these things. With that said, Sam, Grant Williams is like a first vice president of the Players Association, and he got moved from Dallas in his first year there because people, basically a lot of stuff behind the scenes, like, hey, man, this dude talking too much, doing too much, got to get him out of here. In Charlotte, it seems like he might have added a much needed edge for a team that doesn't necessarily like have one, to have much of an identity. But dude, you can't be jumping into people's faces. Right. When the play literally has nothing to do with you. And then grown men, Sam, were saying to, you can clearly hear them say it, you're a b-. Sam, to me, those are fighting words in itself.
Right. Well, I mean, although I hear you, man, I get said way more than people realize. I feel like I'm lip reading that every other night in today's NBA. You know what I mean? That's true. Not to go down this road, but it does at times when you talk about the officiating to people, and people are typically tough on the refs. I get that for sure, but I don't think people quite understand like the kind of the nature of the dialogue that is pretty consistently out there on the floor. So yeah, like you see, Grant hearing that, and Grant in general is a guy who, like you hit on it a second ago, if you had a calculus or like a metric to measure a guy whose off-court reputation is just polished and smooth and clean and totally clean, and then on the floor, not that well liked and pretty damn edgy. And the part that killed me is when he gets bounced from that game, not the best mic drop when he looks over at the Warriors bench. It just gave kind of this corny wave. You know what I mean? He was waving at Draymond. But, that we'll see if that helps Charlotte. But yeah, Grant is an interesting dude for sure.
Yeah, he is. He's an interesting dude in an interesting place, being a first vice president of the Players Association. And I think that's something, it's seemingly like we can just dovetail from one thing to the next, because I want to talk a little bit about All-Star. I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because we've killed All-Star since All-Star Sunday night over a week ago.
Right.
But you had something really interesting in your postmortem All-Star column, basically saying, hey, look, the Players Association and the league thought they could fix effort into the All-Star game. That clearly did not happen. And one of the rumblings that you reported was, hey, maybe the league should be paying a little bit more for the All-Star game as well. And I think if the numbers are correct, the winner gets $100,000 per player, the loser gets $25,000 per player.
Correct. Yep.
And I guess you juxtapose that against the in-season tournament where it was $1 million per player and there was all of this incentive put in it. Is the league going to have to further incentivize not just Sunday night, but Saturday night as well?
We'll see. I mean, first of all, I think, is it $500,000 for in season, I believe? Is that off?
You mean the loser or the winner?
No, the winner.
The winner gets $1 million per player.
Is it $1 million?
Yeah.
Man, my memory's failing me there. All right. I thought it was $500,000.
You're having a senior moment.
I am. I mean, you call me a senior writer. You're a senior writer. We got a lot of senior around here. listen, man, there's so many layers to this thing. The money part, yeah, like you have to obviously remember that at the end season tournament, I think that part of the motivation for the players, first of all, those games actually matter. Mm-hmm. Championship game obviously doesn't, but then at that point, you're just trying to get a trophy. But on top of that, you had the idea that even if you're LeBron James and you're, you know, between off court, on court, you're bringing in $100 million a year, you are a good enough teammate that you have guys on your roster on minimum salaries where right. this money actually matters. And so I thought that was pretty cool during the in-season tournament to see the way that it seemed to make a difference and motivate players on the floor. And man, like if you're Adam Silver and you go from that experience where I'm sure you felt very appreciative of the players because this is an important project for the NBA as they continue to negotiate their media rights deal. They continue to try to incentivize partners to invest in the in-season tournament. That's a tentpole event now. Okay, now fast forward to All-Star Weekend. All those same dynamics are still in place, except for the fact that the game doesn't matter. Obviously, Saturday night doesn't matter, but the entertainment value matters and the fan experience does matter. Now, the money stuff is just, I don't personally think that is the answer because the question becomes how much is it going to take?
Right.
Because these are now all-stars. You don't have the motivation of having teammates on minimum deals or lesser contracts. These are all guys who, if you had an average salary, is probably in the $30 million range, $25 million range. So what kind of money would it take to get them motivated? On top of that, and I think some of my colleagues and I disagree here. I think one of them being the legendary David Aldridge at The Athletic. We've talked about this. David feels like, you know, take all the sponsors, put a ton of money in a bucket and just make it happen. And players are going to compete. I do think a little bit about the optics and the idea that the fans, you know, like when I reported that story the other day, I know we can't react too much to social media, but the reaction on social media was extremely negative with people mm-hmm. turned off and basically saying how much is too much for these guys. Like, can you just go out there and honor the game and play hard like the guys who came before you did? But yeah, I mean, that, like it or not, that was the chatter coming out of the game, was the money stuff. And then it's funny, last night I was driving back from the Warriors game. They had Denver in town, and I actually listened to most of Draymond's podcast. And sure enough, on Draymond's pod, he detailed the money component and essentially kind of talked about how this is something players are discussing. But he also hit on another one that I had heard before and probably should have written, which is the location question. And like players saying, well, I don't want to go be in Indianapolis for 4 days in the freezing cold. And this is where, you know, like you said earlier on the other storyline, Vinny, with I think it was Grant Williams, like read the room. Like the guys are not reading the room right now. Like mm-hmm. fans don't want to hear that, you know, hey, I want to be in Miami for All-Star weekend. Hey, I want to get paid more to actually compete in the All-Star game. This is one of the few times in my memory that I can remember just looking at the best players in the game and wondering why they seem to be going down a road that I think, you know, PR wise is not great for them. And I don't know what the answers are, but I don't think their suggestions are the answers.
Yeah. A guy that I've done radio with plenty on Sirius, Antonio Daniels, who does TV work for the New Orleans Pelicans. He says, I'm all for player empowerment. I'm not for player entitlement. And sure. anything that tilts too far in the other direction, like too much team control, you don't like it. Too much, I won't say player control, but there has to be checks and balances. And right now, there doesn't seem to be a lot of checks and balances. And for the Players Association, to me, Sam, I wonder if this is some level of pushback from the CBA, where I don't feel like they made a lot of gains in that. If you go back to from where they were in 1998, I'm going really back far in the archives, and I wasn't covering the league in 98. I was in eighth grade. But the players had 57% of basketball-related income, and that was off of the guys like Michael Jordan and Patrick Ewing and Isaiah Thomas, all those guys who were heavy parts of the Players Association back then. Then in the 2011 lockout, it came down to from 57% to 50. That is a huge cut of the pie, but you're saying, hey, these guys are making all this money. You're absolutely right. The pie has gotten bigger, so players are going to take more of the pie. But if you look back, they've been giving up far more than they have gotten back from the owners. And I feel like in some ways, especially being in some of those rooms like we have over the past couple of All-Star weekends, Sam, this feels like some pushback. I won't say rebelling, because I think that's a negative term given the dynamics here. But sure. It's definitely, in my thought, being that it's been like pushback against the owners. You guys are making us do this. You're making us play. You're making us play 62 games. You're making us do this in-season tournament thing. And it feels like everything is a battle between one side and the other, and the fans and subsequently the game sort of gets lost in the middle of it.
That's all very fair. I think the macro outlook that you just shared is dead on. I think within that, if you want to hone in on some of the key characters here, I thought All-Star Weekend was really enlightening and interesting in terms of Adam Silver and his relationship with the players, because I'm sure you heard the same stuff coming out of All-Star Weekend. I think a lot of frustration at the league office level, starting at the very top. And I think disappointment is probably the word, where, you know, this is a partnership where, by and large, Adam, I think, is used to getting buy-in, and it's all this kind of capital that he has, you know, built up over the years in being a player's commissioner and being a guy mm-hmm. who did it differently than David Stern and didn't always rule with the iron fist. And even all the way down into like individual suspension decisions and some of the disciplinarian stuff, where on balance, you know, I think Adam is fairly a pro player on that front. And, yep. and if you're in his position, then, you know, when that should pay off is when I need a favor from you, which is just, okay, can you go compete in this All-Star game? And not only that, I mean, man, Vinny, you had other layers to it too. There was, you know, all-time greats in the building. You got Larry Bird spending the entire weekend imploring these yep. guys publicly to play hard. Yep. Dr. J behind the scenes doing some of the same stuff. And the guys just weren't feeling it, you know. And the only thing is, I don't have clarity on how orchestrated, if at all, it was, or if it was just a reflection of kind of their shared mood. You know, I have a hard time thinking that Anthony Edwards' choice to say post game that he had no interest in competing and just sees it like a break was part of some, you know, collaborated effort. I don't think it was. That was just a young guy speaking his mind. Even, you know, part of what I wrote, I kind of wander up to Jalen Brunson's postgame mix zone media, and Jalen had shared this story about how at halftime, when the East team already had, I think, 104 points, they looked at each other and said, hey, we can get to 200, like we'd make history, you know, and they were excited about this. And he didn't share this story with any hesitation. He just felt like they had fun, and he, like, they were all looking around going, why is everybody so mad? Like, that was a good time. And just didn't really see kind of what the reaction was going to be.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into that. And before we move on, a little housekeeping. You were correct. I was not on the in-season tournament thing. Players on the losing team in the championship game, $200,000. Players on the winning team, $500,000. I got that wrong.
Yeah, buddy, who's the senior now?
You know, no, I just got it wrong. That's not, you can't even blame that on the senior. I'm not at a round number. I have not reached officially middle age or anything like that. I just got it wrong, and I can admit to getting stuff wrong.
Fair enough.
I'm not that far away from middle age, though. But we can talk about that later. But when we come back with Sam Amick, we're going to talk about Steve Kerr's new contract and the very intriguing Western Conference. We are back on A Good Word with Sam Amick from The Athletic. Sam, one of the things I did not mention, but I will mention here, the Los Angeles Clippers are going through a complete and massive rebrand. You know that, of course, that they are moving to Inglewood, to the Intuit Dome, starting next season. But now they've changed the team colors, the jerseys, the logo. It came out earlier this morning, where it looks like a little bit like a ship pointing north with a C around it. And the N on Los Angeles is actually at center court, because they want to know everybody to know it's pointing north. Just as a whole, is this necessary? Do you like it? Or is it just further separating themselves from any vestiges of the Donald Sterling era, further separating themselves from any comparison to the Lakers?
I mean, first of all, Vinny, as you know, we got going up and early on the West Coast here, so I'm playing catch up. You got me looking at the Clippers Twitter feed to to see what I think of his new logo. I hadn't even seen this. I mean, it's not surprising. The Clippers, for the longest time, it's not only separating yourself from the, you know, the previous Sterling era, it's the Lakers component. You know, if you go back to when Ballmer took over, you remember the old street lights over city lights approach, you know, and the idea that the Lakers were Hollywood and the Clippers were the real LA. I mean, they've been trying very hard from a marketing standpoint to stand out, and they have to, you know what I mean? Because business wise, I don't think casual fans, so to speak, understand that, like, the absolute, you know, massive divide between the Lakers fan base and what that entails and the Clippers, even to this day, you know, even with the better team and better players at this particular time. But, you know, Steve Ballmer, I am buying what he's selling. You know what I mean? Like, you get the arena done, you know, All-Star Weekend coming in 2 years. That's going to be, you know, a huge moment for them. And listen, I know there's a long ways to go, but even kind of from Ballmer on down, the Clippers' ability to, and this is the best kind of branding, is just go out and play really good basketball, to go get Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the floor to convince these guys that enough with the load management era, like, it's time, as your contracts come up this summer, to go compete and to go play. And they obviously get James Harden and they have a good thing going. But the branding stuff comes with it. They have to absolutely kind of grind and fight tooth and nail for every fan in that city, because that is still to this day a massive Laker city.
Yeah, and I will tell you this. I think they're halfway there. And I don't say that as a shot. I say that I think it's just a matter of practicality. When I say they're halfway there, I think it takes about 20 years for a fan base to truly connect with a franchise, because I feel like fan bases are probably only as strong as how the kids feel about them, because that's going to be the future season ticket base. So I think it takes about 20 years for those kids to grow up and to not know a life without the LA Clippers being a serious franchise. And if you want to point at not just maybe Doc Rivers getting there, when Doc Rivers got there in 2013, that's when we started looking at the Clippers. Chris Paul was already there. Blake Griffin had already been there. Chris Paul was only there, I think, for a year. Blake Griffin had been there for like two or three. And they had been fun, but they weren't really serious. And even though Doc Rivers didn't take them anywhere, per se, that they hadn't been before, I feel like we started looking at them differently. Then a year later, Ballmer comes because of the whole Donald Sterling fiasco. And now we're 10 years later. So I don't think, Sam, that well until after PG and Kawhi and Harden are gone, will we see the levels of success that they've sort of begun to create with this Clipper franchise. The building is going to be one thing, being in the heart of Inglewood. I don't know if you've ever been there, but they took me on a tour during the playoffs last year when they were playing the Suns in the first round. Yep. And it was like the Intuit Dome, then right across the street from that is SoFi, then a little bit further down, it's the Forum. Not quite on one block, but you could kind of see it, you know, overhead. And I was like, this is really in the heart of Inglewood. And I like the colors. The colors look serious. The logo looks like you should be taking us completely serious. And I do think that I like, from a optics perspective, Sam, and from a, we know this is a long game thing, Sam, I feel like they're making the right moves.
I'm with you. And not only that, I mean, again, you know, the marketing department exists for a reason. All these things matter, but the basketball is first and foremost. And within that like basketball operations, ownership, coach, players, that stuff matters the most. And, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but if we were doing a power rankings of high functioning organizations, they are doing pretty well. You know what I mean? Absolutely. I don't know where they're at on the list, but Lawrence Frank and that front office, which is a pretty loaded front office, you know, with Mark Hughes and Trent Redden and, you know, guys all down the line, and Steve Ballmer being a Mark Cuban style owner, where he's extremely involved and his voice is heard every single day, but he's not, you know, he's not undermining his people. And then Ty Lue being one of the best coaches in the game. They have a lot of things going for them. And then, you know, the roster, I mean, it's funny, this is just part of sports, but the other day, I think it was Tim McMahon's piece on ESPN about the Paul George trade and you know, the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander component. And it's like, all right, you lose a guy in SGA who now is an MVP candidate, you know, and conceivably it looks like that trade maybe worked out better for the other team. Well, I mean, they're in it. You know, Paul's out there, Kawhi's out there. they are title contenders this year. So that's how you separate yourselves in the market. But they needed their own building. I mean, that's the biggest thing.
Yeah.
You know, the Staples Center experience is one where it's like, you talk about being the little brother. They weren't just the Lakers' little brother. Like, they were the, you know, the LA Kings' little brother. They were like, you know, mom and dad had two kids within about 2 years of each other, and then waited like 10 years to have a third kid. Like, and that was the Clippers, like on the bottom end. And in terms of the way that the scheduling worked within the building and the priorities, and then all the politics that would go on with like the banners, you know, remember the Clippers always covering up the Lakers banners. You know, it's just, you can feel the uncomfortableness, especially because Bomber is such a force.
Yes.
And the type of guy that wants to have his own house. You could tell how miserable he was in Staples for all these years. So I think it'll take off when you get to the, you know, the new building in Inglewood. I mean, listen, I understand that property is kind of, you know, one of the few places in town where they could do it, but obviously no mistake that you're literally going back to where the Lakers made their hay back in the day. I mean, the city of LA has got a lot of good memories coming out of Inglewood from the old Forum days. So, I mean, I haven't seen it yet. I think it'll be fun, though. I'm excited to see it.
I haven't been on the inside. Like I said, it was over a year ago.
Yeah.
And it's funny you make the third child analogy, Sam, because, not to super personalize it, it was me and my sister. And then 12 years later, my parents was like, yeah, we're pregnant again. I'm like, with what? And make no mistake, that third child is the favorite. Okay.
See, that flipped, though. I mean, I don't think the Clippers felt like the favorite.
And the Lakers cast such a huge shadow. Now, speaking of huge shadows, you were, since you live in the Bay Area, you were at Golden State, Denver last night, where the Nuggets basically showed that they are a couple weight classes better than the Golden State Warriors, as good as the Warriors are, right? Steve Kerr gets his 2-year, $35 million extension, which per year sets up him to be the highest paid coach in the league. He lines up with Stephen Curry's extension. So those two could theoretically walk out together in the sunset, similar to Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson in 1998. Similarly, Klay Thompson is up for free agency after this year. He declined the 2-year, I think maybe $48 million deal. He's had a marginal season by his own standards, battling aging. And you talked to him last night. He had a hot first half against Denver, kept him in the game. And as soon as he cooled down, the Warriors cooled down. But just talk to me about what he's going through at this moment.
Yeah, it was a good chat. The backstory, and as you know, I think like Klay's pretty tough to pin down media wise, not real big on doing kind of, you know, long reflective interviews. A couple weeks ago in the locker room, I forget where they were. They were on the road. But, you know, he had that viral interview where mainly I think it was Anthony Slater from Our Place and Tim Bontemps from ESPN talking to Klay about not being in the closing lineup, right? And he was real vulnerable and open about how hard it was. And you know, I think the fans reacted in mixed ways to that. But I think for me, it was just, I kind of liked it. Like, he was real honest about how hard it is to kind of, you know, deal with father time and deal with, you know, the way that your career is going to change on the back end. So fast forward to last night, when I was out at All-Star Weekend, I'd gone to Tech Summit, which is, as you know, a kind of a popular event where executives, owners, agents, former players all meet in a big old conference room to discuss kind of the latest and greatest in technology related to the NBA. So it's a funny one because the event is off the record. But the NBA also promotes like little selected aspects of the day. So Larry Bird had a sit down with Bob Costas during that event. And the one thing that wasn't promoted and that I actually wanted to talk to Klay about was that Larry, as he was kind of just talking about which players he likes to watch, out of nowhere, just went on this just, you know, about 30, 40 second, you know, kind of like soliloquy about Klay Thompson and how amazing he is. And he talked about Klay's game in Indiana where, you know, he scored 60 in three quarters and he talked about him, you know, dribbling the ball just 8 times. And he was sitting there going like, that's amazing. It's Larry Bird saying, how do you do that? That's amazing. And when I saw it, I kind of thought to myself like, man, Klay's going through a lot. Like, I bet you if he doesn't hear about this, like this, he'd get a kick out of this. So ended up kind of making sure it was on his radar. He ended up seeing the video and we talked about that. And it really did kind of shed a light on where he's at right now, because as far as the Larry thing, it made his day. He said that when he saw it, that it's the kind of thing he's going to keep that video on his phone forever. And he compared it to back in the day when Kobe had a quote about Clay and Steph being like that they had a killer instinct. That was Kobe said that meant a lot to Clay. So, but the reason it matters in terms of Clay's experience right now is that he's just in this place where he's very comfortable admitting this, I'm in that mode where I can take all the pick me ups I can get, you know, and things that make me feel good about, you know, remember who I was, but also who I am and who I'm, you know, still trying to be. But by and large, I think he's handling the shift to the six man role pretty well. I talked to some of his teammates last night about behind the scenes, you know, you've heard some about some frustration, but I think he's gotten through that pretty quick. Kevon Looney spoke in pretty glowing terms about Clay's vibe lately and the way that he's handling it, and basically said that it's really important for them because you've got a lot of guys whose roles are changing. And if a future Hall of Famer like Clay is going to bitch and moan and be miserable, then that's going to set a bad tone for the whole room. You know, Kevon Looney is not as high profile a name as Clay, but he, you know,
he's beloved in that locker room.
He's beloved. And he also is a guy who had been starting, you know, for the longest time and now is not. You know, Andrew Wiggins' role has changed. You know, there's a lot of guys in this, but it's a good thing. If the Warriors are going to have any kind of, you know, era right now, just in terms of contending, those are the things that have to happen for them to survive. So Jonathan Kuminga can rise, you know, so Brandon Podziemski can do his thing. So Clay, you know, when we talked, he basically said that he's hanging in there. I did kind of touch on, I wanted his opinion on this particular move. And, you know, I mean, listen, it's very possible that you make this kind of choice with a guy of that magnitude that it might change the way he sees free agency down the line. He indicated that it didn't, that he still wanted to stay with the Warriors, and was basically just taking it kind of week by week. It's funny, and I'll probably put this in the column when I write it today, but like, you know, this guy, Klay Thompson, who is so beloved by so many different communities, you know, through his kind of anti-shoot tour life, he became China Clay, right? Like, we knew the China Clay part. Then we had, you know, Boat Clay, the guy who gets out on the water and loves talking about the sunrises and is, you know, just like a Bill Walton type character. This guy right now is like glasses half full Clay. Like, he seems like he's trying to find the positives in everything. The other night, for quick story for you, Vinny, let's see, this is the game before Charlotte, the Laker game. Yeah, it was Thursday, I guess. They play the Lakers. They win, but Clay is 1 of 9 from the field. Like, he did some nice things in other aspects of the game, but he's 1 of 9 from the field. Well, that night, his alma mater, Washington State, you know, I think they got in the tournament. Admittedly, I need to go back and look at that. But, like, Washington State did something, and he was very excited. And he's literally walking around the room going, man, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. Like, I don't even care that I shot 1 of 9. Like, he's trying to stay in a good place because, like, he's talked about, he knows, and Steve Kerr's talked to him about this, that, like, he's one of those people who, and we all know him, where it's like, for good or for bad, their energy is intense. Mm-hmm. And when it's good, it can light up the room, and when it's bad, it can darken the room. And that is, I think, what he's having to manage right now.
Yeah, to compare it to friends, like, you have friends like that where when they're on, they can be some of the most intense yet annoying people you will ever meet, right? And you just take all of that because you're like, at least he's with us. At least he's around. At least I know he's engaged and he's here. And yeah, he's going to blow up my phone with some of these crazy texts, but he's here and he's around. And then on the flip side of that, when he doesn't text you with something annoying, you're like, okay, you feel that. You feel the negative energy even if you're nowhere near him.
Right.
You feel like you need to check on him. You feel like, hey, where is he at? How's he doing? Is he okay? Somebody, you need to text somebody else. Hey, have you heard from him? That's to me, is like a basketball equivalent of Clay, where usually, Sam, players go through their basketball mortality. They start to embrace it, or they start to have to understand it during off seasons, where you go into it saying,
yes,
hey, basketball player, you're going to start coming off the bench. So you have the summer to adjust to a role, adjust to what 100%. It's going to be. He's doing this in the middle of the season.
Kevon made that point, Vinny. That's a great point by you. And Kevon said that's the first thing out of Kevon's mouth is he was like, it's not like he had a training camp to get used to this. You know, this is in the middle of the season. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And to add another layer to your comparison to friends in regular life, the difference here, too, is that he's an elder statesman in the room. So, like, it's one thing when you're talking about friends and peers of a similar age. You're talking about incredibly impressionable. You know, he's 34 at this age. They got 21-year-olds in the room. They got guys who, A, are motivated and just thirsty to get their own career on the rise, and then B, haven't seen one iota of kind of what Klay Thompson has seen or done, and the impact that the way he moves could have on them is big, not only for this team this season, but honestly for the rest of the way down the road. Is they're going to learn, like, you know, how some of their vets handled father time. Do you do it gracefully, or did you, you know, go down kicking and screaming in the worst kind of way? You know, again, I think Clay's had his moments, but right now it everybody is saying that he's in a good place. And the thing basketball wise that we can't forget, and it sounds like when people say this, they're just trying to take up for Clay, but it is true. Like, the guy remains, I mean, a terrible year from beyond the arc for him is 37%.
Right.
And that, you know, we always talk about Steph and the gravity that he creates. Well, Clay creates his own gravity. In fact, it's funny, on the Larry Bird clip, Bob Costas had said to him, like, well, when you got a guy like Steph next to you and he's getting double teamed, like, I'm sure that's how Clay scored 60 like he did, and almost taken away from what Clay did a little bit. And Larry shot back. He goes, well, why would you leave that guy open? Like, why would you leave Clay open? Like, right. Clay's a killer. And, you know, all that stuff matters. So, you know, it's funny. I've known Clay a long time. Haven't done a ton with him as far as like intimate reporting and, you know, and getting into his story. But this is a guy that has accomplished a lot, and that it does feel like is starting to come to grips with, like, let me just make the most of my final years. Like, he indicated, he joked about how he's not about to be like LeBron playing until he's 40 years old. You know, I don't know how many years he has left, but, you know, I think it's on the shorter end of that. So, some humility and I think reality right now for him in terms of what he's dealing with.
It's really hard for very prideful basketball players, very prideful athletes at all who are in the public eye to deal with the mortality of coming on the downside of things, especially when he's looking at Steph and Steph being a better basketball player. Steph is not a more productive player, but Steph has transformed his game and grown in such a way that I think Steph is a better basketball player than he was 4 or 5 years ago, even when he was at his height. He's not better athletically, but I feel like Steph has figured out how to master the game, the timing of the game, the pace of the game, in a way that he didn't before. And Clay's also looking at Draymond Green, who was rewarded in the offseason despite all the troubles that he had. And Draymond is still incredibly valuable. So the two guys that you came in here and you started this thing with, the other two pillars of this,
right?
They figured out ways to still be really good versions of themselves, if not better versions of themselves in some way. And you're the guy that is struggling with that. Like, that's really, to me, at the heart of all of this, because you're in the same jersey, you're in the same spot, you're in all these familiar things. It's almost like, you know, I can't remember what fight it was. It might've been Muhammad Ali versus Larry Holmes. This is like going in the Wayback Machine. And Muhammad Ali said, I'm in the best shape of my life. He said, I've never been in better shape. And on the outside, it looked like it was, but on the inside, it wasn't. You know what I mean? And it manifested itself in that fight. And I think that's where you hear a lot of times players. I guarantee you, Sam, if Clay goes back to the Warriors next season, you're going to hear best shape of my life.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going to hear that.
Yeah.
But to spin it forward for these Warriors, Sam, I think they're like 10-3 in their last 15, in their last 13. They lost last night to Denver. And I felt like, when I said earlier, they're in different weight classes. I feel like for them to make a significant run, I won't say it's impossible, Sam, but I feel like a lot of things would have to break right because it's not set up for them. You know what I mean? Like they have to, I think they're like 3 games behind the 6th seed, but there's 3 teams between them and the 6th seed. And it just doesn't feel like they will have been able to get it together in enough time to do the things that they want to do here. Do you see it that same way? Was last night's game a microcosm of
the distance? I might differ a little bit.
Okay.
I mean, I like you said, that winning 10 out of 13 is, that's a good sample size.
Yes.
And if you look at the positives and the negatives of where they're at right now, okay, we talked about Clay. It seems like he's okay in the six-man role. Listen, it's going to be a roller coaster. He scored 35 in his first game off the bench, and Utah had 3 points the next game. Last night, 21 or 23 in the first half, nothing in the second half. So you're going to have to roll with some of that. But last night, and this is, you know, one of the few times we ever say this, was Steph Curry not have a great night. You know, yeah. Steve Kerr talked post-game about Steph being tired coming out of the All-Star break. So if that's the only issue with last night's game, then you know, I can rock with that. And Denver's the defending champs. We still don't give them enough credit. You know, that is they are the standard bearer of this season, and they still have it in them, and I could see them winning the whole thing. Again, the reason I think I'm probably – I don't know, like, what kind of ceiling I'm putting on these Warriors, but the reason I did find myself last night – I mean, they were up almost 20, I think, at one point, and they blew that lead in the first half. But I started believing in it is Kuminga obviously is something. Like, he's really found his game, and he's inconsistent too. But Steve Kerr and that kind of wall that was broken down, you know, earlier in the season when Kuminga was so frustrated, and admittedly I've joked at our place at the Athletic, you know, it was Shams Charania and Anthony Slater who had the piece on Kuminga being upset. I've joked with the Warriors that they should just, for all of time, thank the Athletic for helping the Warriors face their issues with Kuminga. Because right after that story came out, Steve's meeting with Jonathan. Mm-hmm. You know, they're having a come to Jesus moment. Jonathan now raves about Steve and basically says that he didn't really understand what Steve was trying to get out of him. And like they got up to the cliff of possibly losing a very talented young prospect because he was miserable to salvaging that situation. That matters a lot. Wiggins all of a sudden can play with Kuminga, which was a major issue before. Pajimski is really something. I mean, that guy's a fantastic young player. I don't know what it leads to, but if you add in Steph being Steph and Clay helping in that role and Draymond being Draymond, you know, they are your classic, like, I wouldn't want to see him in the first round type of team. I don't know if they can get to the sixth spot. That is their goal. Like you said, there's three teams in between at the moment, but they have something in a way that I did not think they did even a month ago.
I guess the reason I say that, Sam, is because winning is so hard in the NBA, and you have to have everybody rowing in the same direction, and you kind of have to know who you can depend on a night-to-night basis. And like 1 to 12, they might have some of the most interesting players in the league. You know what I mean? When you have Šarić out there and then Chris Paul is going to come back. So what does that happen with Pajimski and everything else? Like, those are coaching decisions as opposed to your 1 through 8 being so good to me. You know what I mean? Your 1 through 8, your best 8 players.
Oh yeah. That is. And like, I know we're going to get to Steve's extension.
Yeah.
Like, man, like he's about to make that money because he's got a tricky, tricky roster to manage. Even last night, you know, they played Šarić a couple minutes and he didn't do much. And every night there's one or two guys where you look at the box and go, I don't know if so-and-so had to play, you know, like he's got too many choices and not a firm grip on the lineups. Even the closing lineup has changed. You know, last night Clay closed, came in with like 4.5 minutes left, and that hasn't always been the case. So they are tricky. I mean, the Chris Paul thing, we joked earlier about being, you know, seniors in this thing, right, and doing this for a minute. Like it does make me feel kind of old that, like, Chris Paul and Klay Thompson are about to be the off-the-bench backcourt for the Golden State Warriors. Like, that is something that is a bit of a mind-bender. But yeah, I actually think, you know, depending on how Chris looks, like, I don't know. Like, that's not too bad, you know, in terms of depth and having a little something. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the wins that they've had during the streak, and I look at, out of their 13 games that they've played 4 what I would say, what I termed tough games. That's what I wrote down in my show notes. Tough games. Phoenix, the Clippers, the Lakers, and Denver. Went 2-2 in those games. And the Lakers game, they did win, and they lost a couple weeks ago on a Saturday night. You know, remember that game, the double overtime game, whatever it was, when Steph and LeBron.
Yeah, I got it in front of me here, 145-144.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a couple of weeks ago, and that was, you know, a different iteration. But those are the games to me throughout this stretch where, yeah, they're barely winning at home. They're not great on the road. They're about to go on the road for 4 straight right now, 4 straight sort of winnable games. They play Boston on Sunday. on a national TV game. I'm not sure how that one's going to go, considering where Boston is.
You just skipping right over the Knicks. We call the Knicks winnable. No, no love for the Knickerbockers.
Can you tell me who's playing for the Knicks right now, Sam?
That's fair.
Because that Tibbs train has run all those dudes to the infirmary. All of them. Only player who's not run to the infirmary is Jalen Brunson, who's a Tibbs loyalist.
Yep.
But to your point about Steve Kerr, I kind of got the feeling with the way that the discussion was before the contract, when everybody asked Steve Kerr, he kind of gave the intimation that, hey, they know what I want, and that's not changing. And it seemed like I won't say that they split the baby with the 2-year, $35 million extension, but it kind of felt like he wanted to be the highest paid coach because of all that he'd accomplished to this point with the 4 championships and keeping this thing upright and advancing this thing to places that had never been before. Are you surprised that it was 2 years as opposed to 4? Are you surprised that it lines up with Steph? How do you view this entire thing? Do you just view it as they got 3 chances to win another championship?
Not surprised, but man, like it's interesting to see the way Joe Lacob is navigating this era. You know, this is, I don't know if Bob Myers would have taken his version of this contract, but these are the same themes that were there when Bob was coming up on the end of his contract. And while, listen, the Warriors have done a wonderful job of making sure that Bob's exit didn't really have any controversy attached and was by and large considered, you know, Bob deciding he wanted something new.
Mm-hmm.
I personally just, I just remember reporting on it at the time. And like, we can't forget that it was very clear that Bob had the opinion that, you know, given what he had accomplished, that similar to Steve Kerr, I think he had every right to believe that he should be the highest paid executive in basketball. And the pathway to that happening, you know, appeared to be more challenging apparently than it was for Steve Kerr. I don't know the answer to this, but you know, would Bob have taken a 2-year contract at the whatever the money was that made him the highest paid guy? I think Joe probably learned his lesson there, because you know, losing Steve Kerr after losing Bob Myers, after everything this team has been through, you know, with this season, you know, they held on to their guy, but for 2 years, right? Like
right. You
said earlier, like the idea of Steve and Steph riding off in the sunset together. Like, I don't think Steph's done 2 years from now, you know? So I think there's going to be a fork in the road at that point. You know, and I think Steph obviously wants to retire a Warrior and then have that statue go up. But I can't speak for him, but man, when you see LeBron doing what he's doing and Steph still in tip-top form, getting all-star appearances and early on this season being in the MVP discussion, he's not slowing down. But for Steve, it gives him a runway where he can go ahead and try to pull this thing off. This, you know, it's not the 2 timeline thing that they promoted before.
Right.
It's like a really different, more complicated version of that. But that challenge remains. You know, take a bunch of future Hall of Famers and mix in young prospects and find a way to be contenders. And so, you know, Steve gets to feel respected because, you know, his contract reflects his accomplishments. And then he also, you know, isn't overcommitting here from a time standpoint.
Yeah, it's a really, I would say this, guys, like in the modern NBA, championships or championship teams kind of they've all ended abruptly, if you think about it. They've all ended with some level of, I don't know if controversy would be the word, but it feels like there would be unnatural endings. Like whether it's LeBron James just picking up and leaving one team and going to the next, or Magic Johnson having to retire because of HIV, or Larry Bird's back acting up on him combined with Len Bias dying and Reggie Lewis dying, you know, after Larry Bird retired, or, you know, Michael Jordan retiring not once but twice. Like, all those things have ended rather abruptly, or even Shaq and Kobe where Shaq is traded. You know what I mean? When the Lakers might have had some more runs in them. Nothing ends naturally in the modern NBA. And basically, guys, I just took you from 1984 to now. The only thing that might have had a natural ending might have been the Spurs with Tim Duncan. And they never actually went like back to back. They just won 5 championships over maybe a 17-year span or something like that.
First of all, buddy, I'm so honored that I got to sit here for one of my favorite parts of the Goodwill pod, which is like when you come at us with the historical context. I told you over All-Star Weekend, you got this great recall. And you hit
useless
the nail on the
knowledge.
Head. Yeah, man. No, it's not useless. I mean, it just was pretty useful right there, because you know, past is prologue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's basically what you're saying is, and I'm sitting here thinking about, I covered the end of the Spurs dynasty and I'm curious, you know, like, all right, if that's the closest comparison to the best case scenario for the Warriors, I don't like the timelines don't really match that. Like there's not really a kind of a timeline for Steph to just kind of walk away and fade off into the sunset. Cause at the end of this 2 years, I would predict that Steph's still going to be really good. And then, you know, is Klay still there? You know, Draymond probably still there, barring more drama and a trade. You know, he's got a 4-year deal. I don't know what it looks like because, and this is a good problem to have,
right?
But the quote unquote problem at the middle of it all is number 30 not going away, like from a basketball standpoint, like remaining elite. And you know, and with good reason, the Warriors are going to, they're going to ride that train all the way until the end. So, you know, this might be one of those dynasties that, that has the kind of ending that we haven't seen before, you know, good or bad.
Yeah. I mean, I think Steph is similar to Duncan in this way, where people talked about the Spurs dynasty being, or the Spurs system being whatever it is. The Spurs dynasty was Tim Duncan and everybody else just kind of fit around that. The Warriors dynasty by and large is Stephen Curry. Now, there was this 3-year period, Sam, where Kevin Durant was the best player in the world. And nobody likes to act like it actually happened. They actually like to pretend that he was like Harrison Barnes souped up or something like that. No shade to Harrison Barnes. I'm just using as a point of reference. But that's what they try to do. And Steph has kind of actually grown in that. And speaking, Sam, to like the nerd part of me, I'm going to tell you what I did at dinner last night with a few of my friends. Like, we were talking about future All-Star weekends. You know what my dumbass did, Sam Amick?
Tell me.
I named every All-Star location from the year I was born.
Good Lord. And you nailed it?
I missed. I had a brain fart on 2019. I forgot that it was Charlotte. But as soon as I went through the years, I caught myself. I was like, 2019 is in Charlotte. Nobody told me. They were like.
So did you like, now we're going to get into Vinny's life. Like, okay. did this come in handy in school? Like, were you acing tests and, you know.
I mean, I'm really good at like retaining information.
Okay.
Like history was like an easy subject for me. If you're asking me what happened here, okay, I can tell you what happened here. Science, not so much.
Sure.
Math.
I mean, you're in the right profession. Easy. You're chronicling a different kind of history. I like that.
I'm a weirdo. It's okay. I'm a total weirdo. I bet you one of my best friends who's listening to this, he's like, yeah, he's a weird one, right?
We should put you on the spot and make you do it again, but I won't make you do that.
There's a video, I will tell you this, Sam, last thing. There's a video floating around of me at the JW Marriott during the Western Conference Finals where one of my old bosses who now works for another publication, he asked me to name every MVP from the year I was born, and then he started recording me. And this was after Two Old Fashions.
Good Lord.
Yeah, that was
impressive, brother.
Impressive. Yeah, it was the Two Old Fashions part was very impressive. But before we close out, Sam, because I feel like we are entering a new phase of the Western Conference. Like, not completely disrespecting the Denver Nuggets at all, because ain't nobody beating that fat man 4 times in a series. But nobody. Nobody's beating that fat man 4 times in a series. I don't care. I don't care. All right? We saw
portly.
That.
Portly. We prefer portly.
Portly? Is that what it is? Yeah, I say fat man affectionately. You know what I mean? I'm not calling him Uncle Phil. I'm just saying that's a black reference. That's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Uncle.
Oh, I remember.
Okay, there we go. Okay, I was making sure you're with me. All right. But taking that into account, Sam, what would be the most fun Western Conference final?
Oh, man, let me cheat and break down the standings here. I mean, dude, there's so much good. I mean, there's so much good is the key word. It's not great basketball. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much good basketball in the West. The most fun Western Conference Finals. This is my hot take, man. I don't like OKC's fine. I don't need to see them in the West Finals. I don't know why. Like I just feel like they're too young. Youngins can wait another year. And you want me to take Denver out?
No, Denver can be there.
Okay. Then I'm putting Denver in because Joker has become one of those people, one of those players that I find myself, you know, and it's just the list is pretty short. It's Steph and Giannis and Luka, where you just got to slow down. And even as great as LeBron is, like LeBron and enjoying the LeBron experience is different than those guys, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, from a skill standpoint. LeBron is like, let me go to the heavyweight boxing match and appreciate the way that George Foreman can, you know, pummel this guy. You know, that's not the best comparison, but like those other dudes.
Are you saying
like,
LeBron is a fat, balding man?
Who names all of his kids LeBron, all of them. But like Joker, man, like it, I just love, here's a comparison that hopefully lands. Like Steph was always, I think part of his fame, part of his popularity was his relatability, right? Yep. Because even though people act like he's like Spud Webb, like he's 5'7", 160, but he's, you know, he's 6'3", 190. Now he's probably 210, something like that.
Right.
But like he looks like a regular person who can do irregular things. Joker, you know, humbly called Fat Man by you. We'll keep rolling with that. Like Joker is a different version of that, where it's that guy on the playground where, first of all, you're not picking him because you think in transition defense you're going to get smoked, you know, and so he's probably getting picked, you know, not last, but somewhere deep in the rotation. But then from a footwork standpoint and a shooting standpoint and a skill standpoint, like it's counterintuitive because you look at him on the street and you don't think he would be worth watching to play basketball, and you have to watch him. So mm-hmm. I got to see Joker in the West Finals, and I do have an appreciation for Jamal Murray, not only his game, but, you know, and we had a pretty fun interview recently talking about his story, just what he's been through, you know, the ACL injury and the kind of the adversity that he's gotten through. Is I always love a good comeback story, and Jamal is that. So I'm going to go Nuggets. It's a long-winded way of trying to find the opponent here, buddy. You know what? I'm going to go with Clippers because of a lot of the stuff that we unpacked. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't remember. I mean, first of all, you got the history of the bubble series. So, Paul George, are you going to see ghosts? Are you going to throw three-pointers off the side of the backboard?
Ooh, I like
you know,
it.
Or are you going to get redemption? By the way, I take great, like, pride's the wrong word, but, like, it's an honor to be able to say that I was in the building, like, 30 feet away when that happened. Like, I just remember, you know, in the bubble, Paul hitting, you know, shooting that three and just, and just wondering, like, what is going on in these guys' brains? Like, they suddenly are the Monstars and they can't
play
basketball.
They were totally fried.
Well, they've been open since then. They didn't want to be there. The motivation mm-hmm. was gone. You know, there was a unique component that came with the bubble. But a Nuggets-Clippers series would bring up that history, and that would be fun to watch. But then the Clippers in this, like, this pressure that is coming with their story is wild. Like, I cannot remember anything remotely close to this when you talk about three future Hall of Famers who, and I don't think that's a stretch. That's not a stretch. Those are three future Hall of Famers. Yeah. That where their contracts are up, one guy got his deal done. Paul George is sending signs that he's not sure it'll get done. Probably will, but to be determined. And then James Harden is, you know, last on that list and also going to be a free agent. But the load management chapter and the way that they're now playing, and then when they're out there playing pretty well by and large, but, you know, it, like, do we believe it? You know what I mean? Can they actually go ahead and get to the finals and win the whole thing as they go into this new building? Because if they don't, I mean, a world exists where they absolutely, you know, blow it and they just fall apart at the end and Steve Ballmer's, you know, head burst, and then he's got some tough decisions to make because he's got to market this team. He's got to have faces, you know, for the arena. He's got Kawhi already, but all those dynamics, I think, would lead to a pressure-packed, super entertaining West Finals.
Yeah, and I just have a hard time seeing, like, there was a moment in last night's game where it just felt like Denver figured it out. Like, okay, you try to switch on Jokic, boom, you're going to have a small man on him, and he's going to get the offensive rebound and tip it in, and then Murray's going to work Steph in the mid-range, and then Jokic is going to do what he does. It just feels like they know who they are. I say that to say they're going to be there. It's just a matter of who's going to be against them, because I don't see any team that knows itself as well as the Nuggets do. Minnesota, I think we just have trust issues with them because we have a hard time seeing the Minnesota Timberwolves in a Western Conference Finals, because they've only made the Western Conference Finals one time in their franchise history, which was the 1 year that they won an actual playoff series, which I think you were probably there for.
That was actually the first, I think that was the first road trip of my entire NBA career.
There we go.
Sacramento B days. I actually, this tells you how much things have changed. I was like the sixth reporter, roughly, on the lineup for the Sacramento Bee. Like, we had that kind of cash back then that we were sending, you know, that many people on the road. And even with my, like, you know, lower status, I somehow managed to get a press seat that was about 10 feet away from Chris Webber.
Ooh.
When his three rimmed out in game seven and the T-Wolves moved on and the Kings were done. That was, I mean, historically, I get your point about trust issues with Minnesota. I will say that, first of all, like, the individual players, you got to ask yourself, you know, how much of that baggage do they have? Well, Karl Anthony Towns probably has a fair amount. Like, that's his whole
Rudy
career.
Gobert has his own playoff baggage.
He does, but now, and this is what I love. I mean, I would be just fine. You talk about another fun series. If you want to go Nuggets, T-Wolves, you know, that would be wild because you got Tim Conley, you know, being the architect of both teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the front office executive who was with Denver and then moved to Minnesota. And the way that he built this Timberwolves roster with this stubborn, counterintuitive, at least in terms of what the rest of the league was doing, just go big or go home. We're going to pay Naz Reid. We're going to, you know, bring in Rudy Gobert. We're going to have Carl. That was all he, you know, he continues to claim this wasn't the case. He's full of it. Like, that was all done with Denver in mind. It was all done with Jokic in mind. Like, that's literally the game plan. So I would love to see if they could pull it off because, you know, Mike Conley is a guy who can get it done. Seeing Ann Edwards on that stage, you know, would be dynamic. So, I mean, that would be a fun series too. And I get the skepticism, but it wouldn't shock me because defensively, they're one of the only teams out there consistently playing on that end of the floor. You know, if they can figure out some of their offensive stuff, I could see them getting there.
Yeah, I think you pointed to some things. Minnesota's going to be at a crossroads because of their tax apron. Yep. Golden State's going to be at a crossroads because of time and their tax apron. The Lakers are going to be at a crossroads, who we did not really mention today, just because whenever you have LeBron, you're always at a crossroads. The Clippers are going to be at a crossroads because of Paul George and James Harden. Like, it's going to be a very pressure-packed Western Conference playoffs because of all the stakes of everything that's going to happen after that. And, of course, if you want to see Minnesota, you want to see Minnesota because you want to see what type of spray tan A-Rod comes up with next. And that is all we have for you.
You got me now. See, you're dropping, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air references. I'm going to be the white dude here and just be like, you got me thinking of Ralph Macchio in like NBA commercials now with the old Crossroads movie. Like, we need old man Ralph with the guitar, you know, talking about Clippers, Lakers, Warriors, Crossroads, you know, you and got, selling a soul to the devil so he can play a little music.
Luke, call Jacinda Ortiz, call Tim Frank, put yourself on the NBA payroll and work for those peanuts. That
sounds so appealing.
And that is Sam Amick. Thanks for Sam for giving us some of his time today. Don't forget to look for all of his great coverage at The Athletic on the Athletics app. As he mentioned earlier, his conversation and column with Klay Thompson, that should be up on Tuesday morning on the Athletics website. Thanks to producer John and the entire team that works hard behind the scenes. Dan will be back for another episode of Divine Intervention tomorrow, and I will be back for another episode of The Good Word on Wednesday. Until then, everybody be safe.